It's Tuesday, 6th of March, and you're listening to the Game Green Greencast, your guide to the world of gaming news so far this week. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Cal.
Good evening.
Nikki.
Good evening.
And Catty.
Hello.
Reduced numbers. Someone's going away for a conference. Someone's in bed. Someone else is at work. Or what have you. But we're here podcasting for your listening pleasure. Today we'll be covering such topics as hate speech getting you banned in Rainbow Six Siege. Fortnite Battle Royale is doing better than PUBG on Twitch. And Prey might be teasing a DLC on Twitter. But before that, what have we been up to this week, Cal?
Well then, not much, to be honest with you. I've finished up with my preview of Battalion 1944, which should hopefully be up on the site very soon. And I've started doing a bit of streaming for the Game Grin channel, which has been rather fun. I started yesterday, and it's been coming along nicely. Just a few tweaks here and there to try and get it up and running. But yeah, I've been playing a bit of Battlefield 1 and Assassin's Creed Origins. So if you ever stop by the Twitch channel, and probably between the hours of 10 p.m. and midnight, then you'll soon find me playing.
We've, might as well plug the normal stream, which is 8 p.m. GMT every single day, with our resident streamer Psychopathic.
However you pronounce it.
It's spelt with an S instead of a silent P. Yes, and you've done a one session so far after him?
Yes, after him. And depending on certain days of the week, then I might be able to do some in the afternoon. But that's only because I've not been working. I've been lazy.
That's fair enough. Nikki, what have you been up to?
Working. No, I've been checking out Descenders for PC, which is in preview. So, hoping to get the write-up for that sort of on the site in the next couple of days. It's a really, really good title. And it's one of the few games where I actually enjoy having the motion blur on. But I'm also really bad at it. So, there's that.
That's the game by the Action Hink guys, isn't it?
Yes? Question mark?
So okay, it's the game by the Action Hink guys.
It's not as easy as riding a bike, is it?
It's... the only way I can really think to describe it, like, is... And it's, I don't know, I feel like it's a fair comparison, it might not be, but it's kind of the skate of BMX games. In that, like, every action has a control related to it, and you need to do certain movements with the controllers to do certain things. My issue I'm having is I don't... Like, if you do a jump, and then you kind of, like, you're coming down too fast, or you don't have the right kind of ramp below you, then you get, like, a little warning that you're going to hit the ground and wipe. But it's like, there is a way to sort of adjust the bike in the air. I can't figure that out, so my character just keeps spinning around and just kind of breaking their neck on trees and whatever else they crash into.
I know there is a fun bug in this version, and I hope it kind of it's one of those things that sticks through. If you ride off the maps, it does that thing where it just catapults you in the opposite direction.
Yes, it's really funny because you actually land back in the center of the map. So when you're in like the hub world. Sometimes if you can sort of position yourself, you can almost land on one of the benches, and it's really funny. But no, it's look forward to the whole preview on the site in the next couple of days, but so far I'm really enjoying it.
That's fair enough. Catty, what have you been up to?
I mean, you only asked me a couple of days ago, but I have been playing a few things. I played a little bit of Thief Gold. I mentioned that on the last podcast. and old games are hard. I forget to auto-save, forget to quick-save. I got right to the end of the first mission, got caught by a guard, absolutely decimated, and I had to start again. So that's going to take a while to get through, I think. But yesterday being Monday, the final bit of Life is Strange Beyond the Storm, the farewell episode, released. And I've never cried at a game that's only lasted an hour before, but there we go. That's the thing that happened yesterday.
So, can I just be a jerk and just say that, like, I have no interest in Life is Strange and I kind of don't quite understand all the hype about it? Are you going to be doing a write-up about the little DLC?
We actually haven't written anything up about Life is Strange Beyond the Storm at all. So I'm thinking of doing a sort of a full game roundup, but I have an idea for an article that kind of explains why they released it in a weird order. Because Life is Strange is like just its own thing. Before the Storm is like a prequel to that, and then Farewell is a prequel to all of it. Just it goes even further back in time. But I think you want to play Life is Strange, then you want to play Farewell, and then you want to play Beyond the Storm. It's really Beyond the Storm, Before the Storm. It's kind of weird, but it changes what the story is about in interesting ways. I need to think about that a little bit more and probably play that game again.
So would you say, like, the actual additions of the prequel and the prequel, although obviously I imagine they're kind of a bit spoilery to the main game, do they actually make it more sort of, like, do they sort of add more context to it to make it a better story all round? Because, again, like, I'm quite ignorant, I don't know much, but, like, I understand it's very, people love it, but from what I've seen of Life is Strange, it just seems kind of boring, but everyone does seem really amazed by it, so I'm still thinking of jumping into it, and I'm just kind of curious.
Life is Strange, to answer your first question, definitely. Before the Storm, and especially this prequel little episode, gives a whole lot of context for why one of the characters is the way they are. It's difficult to say things without spoiling it. Definitely these games supplement these sort of bits of the story supplement the original game to a huge extent. Difficult to say if they make them better, but it sort of makes those characters feel more fleshed out. And when it comes to playing Life is Strange, you've got to get to the end of the first episode, and if you kind of like where the first episode ends, stick with it, because it just gets better from there. If you don't like that first episode, which is available for free, if you don't like that first episode, then it's probably not going to be your game.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I've kind of... It's one of those games that I... Because obviously, I'm a big fan of the... I like the Telltale games, but I'm not... like, going out of my way to play them. So I think one of those... I might get round to playing Life is Strange, because as many said and many have heard from others, it's one of those games that's worth playing, because I've always seen it as one of them teen drama games. Yeah, I'm a little silly.
It totally is just teen drama, but yeah, it does teen drama with a kind of sci-fi aspect to it. So its main focus is this teen drama stuff, but there's a sort of the twinge of fantasy sci-fi in the background. And it sort of supplements, it makes the story a little bit more interesting.
Dad?
Okay, myself, I've recently started replaying Red Dead Redemption on the Xbox One. I played it originally on the 360, obviously, that's why I still have the disc. And I didn't quite get to the halfway point, so I'm playing it I was hoping to record the footage, the gameplay, but the Xbox One will only record short clips.
So I thought you could change it.
I haven't been able to find a way to record substantial chunks. It's only up to 5 minutes.
I could have sworn it was... Well, it could be, but it's been ages since I've been, but I thought it was up to 15 minutes. Could be wrong.
This is why the PlayStation is better. but I still am planning on recording some footage from that. We've started putting up some short gameplay, bites, some funny things that happen in games on the YouTube channel. So hoping to add to that, and hoping to finish it before Red Dead Redemption 2 comes out.
Oh, you have plenty of time. There's no doubt Rockstar will probably delay it. which is sad to hear.
And we won't for the PC version, then I've got until 2020. So
you've got all time in the world, because it's never going to come to PC.
Yeah.
Oh, such a sad time. I'm quite tempted to buy an Xbox One again. Maybe not the X, but maybe an S, just purely for backwards compatibility. Because it does it do any improvements? Because I know it sort of... the frame rate's obviously much stable, but I don't know if it upscales it to 4K or... I don't know.
You've got 4K. I couldn't tell you if it does 4K, but whenever you put a 360 disc in, it pretty much downloads 7 gigabytes of something.
Yeah, right.
So I'm assuming that it's some sort of improvement.
Go on. I was going to say, I think that might be you downloading the full game on Steam, and then it uses your disc verification.
I thought that.
Yeah.
I'd hope that it doesn't go up to 4K, bearing in mind I don't think Red Dead Redemption ran in 1080p.
No,
today, so those textures will look awful at 4K. Now,
well, that's interesting. Like with the PS3 version is shite. The Xbox 360 version ran at 720p and had like 2x MSAA, so it had pretty good anti-aliasing on it. But I mean, with the 4Ks, there's people saying that the Xbox One and the Xbox One X will upscale your games to 4K. I don't know all the details about it, but I just sort of imagine if you've got a 4K TV with them going, oh, okay, 4K, 4K, bollocks, it would perhaps upscale it. Never mind.
The thing is that, like, without native 4K textures, upscaled is always going to look noticeably bad. The second you upscale anything, regardless of what they do, you know, with anything, it's always going to look a bit crap. So sometimes I wonder if there's even any point, depending on how old the game is, if there's actually any point.
Yeah. I mean, I, as I was saying before, I just started playing Thief Gold, and I upscaled that to 1080p just so it fit the monitor. And there's a bit right in the tutorial where you sort of can look out some windows and there's some stars there, but it's so clearly been done by someone in paint. And so you can sort of, if you look through this window and sort of jump around, you can see it's literally just a box they've tacked onto the side of the window with this stars on blue background just pasted across on all the walls, and it looks so bad.
Well, from something we don't know that much about, the upscaling abilities of the Xbox One, to Rainbow Six Siege, if you're using homophobic slurs or hate speech, racial, anything that's against the code of conduct, you can be banned for 2 days, 7 days, 15 days, or permanently. Is this too little too late, or a step in the right direction for the community?
Considering that it's taken 2 years for them to come to this, not too little too late, but you sort of think, why is it taking you this long to come up with the same system everyone else has? Sorry, everyone else who has a purchasable game.
Thing is, I think like any way to combat sort of toxicity, you know, and offensive hate speech, anything like that, I think it's always a welcome addition. It is obviously a bit like, well, hang on, this game's entering its third year. Why have you only just added this? But at the same time, like, the actual system that they're proposing in terms of how the different ban lengths, I think it's quite good. It's probably, to some people, considered too strict in terms of, like, you know, you could say a word and then, you know, you're banned for 15 days. But at the end of the day, like, you know, where we are with streaming and tournaments and things, like, yeah, that people need to sort of be put in place. It's similar to the Overwatch League, how, like, there was one, you know, one of the guys used a homophobic insult and, you know, he was fined and banned for a little bit, and that's what should happen, especially in the esports scene. I think they need to be, you know, put in their place.
Well, it does say that they'll be tracking the frequency of which language is used and apply appropriate ban on a case-by-case basis. The section they quote is, any language or content deemed illegal, dangerous, threatening, abusive, obscene, vulgar, defamatory, hateful, racist, sexist, ethically offensive, or constituting harassment is forbidden.
The issue they're going to run into, and I think this is with a lot of stuff, is that obviously, depending on where you are, everyone has their own, like, different sort of cultural slurs and different words, and it might not necessarily... It's that boundary of, like, it's not necessarily offensive to the person using it or the person using it too, but to a viewer it could be offensive, and that's sort of, or how whoever reports them. And there's that weird sort of line that in a way is not there anymore, because obviously you've got to think about how it impacts the person who is being offended by whatever's being said. But it's like, if it's a viewer on Twitch, well, then that falls under Twitch's code of conduct. But I guess in the game, like, I just wonder how, like, they'd look into it. Like, for example, bint is a very... isn't necessarily, I wouldn't say that's overly offensive. That's a very British thing. But someone could find that very offensive, and then you could be banned, and it's like, well... I don't know. So I'm not really making sense, am I?
I know what you mean. It is difficult to tackle sometimes, because obviously a lot of different types of swear words and things like that can be offensive to certain types of people. You know... But I agree with the tournament side of things. You don't want people going around and... I mean, fair enough, the F word, it's fair, that's fine. But, like, genuine, proper, like, offensive and derogative words and things like, you know, like the N word, the racial slurs and all those type of things, then I can understand that. And it's the same with, like, Twitch streaming and things like that. It's like YouTube as well, you know. A lot of YouTube channels and a lot of Twitch streamers don't have age ratings because it kind of cuts their viewership down. So they just like stuff that would just like F and blare and swear as much as like, but they say proper racial slurs and yeah.
Oh gosh, no, definitely. It's the same with
level. Should...
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's right. I was dreaming towards the end anyway. But go.
I was just going to say, like, again, it's like, you know, what in the situation we had a few months back with PewDiePie, where he dropped the N-word, it's like, it's like, it doesn't, you know, in the context it was used, and again, I'm not saying anyone should use the word, I'm not at all, but it's like, in that context, it's like, no, you meant that with offensive nature, so you should be penalised. I don't care what anyone says or whatever, however much you give the charity, you stepped over a line, and in that instance, that he should be dealt with. And again, with that, with the system being added by Ubisoft, like, yeah, that, you know, if someone uses it in the moment, whether it's their first offence or not, they should be treated accordingly, I think.
Yeah, and there shouldn't be any special treatment either from it. Even if it's in a tournament situation, yeah, if they get fined or banned, then so be it, you know. There's no special treatment for those sort of people just because you're popular on Twitch or some bollocks like that.
Well, speaking of Twitch, it's been revealed that Fortnite is now the most watched and most streamed game on Twitch, overtaking League of Legends for most watched, and overtaking PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds for most streamed.
Yeah, I could have seen that happening.
Yeah, my only input is really, is anyone surprised?
I mean, Battlegrounds, over the last couple of months, I still play it on the occasion, but like a month ago or so, it was just overwhelmed with a spur of hackers. The Chinese took over, which that's not being nasty. They're literally the Chinese were all going on to the European and American servers, and there was lots of blatant hackers and connection issues as a result, and the player base kind of suffered as a result because people just weren't having any of it. They were getting really pissed off, and Fortnite, it seems, is picking up really well because it's available on console, on PlayStation and Xbox and PC, and it's really well optimized and actually works as it says it works, you know.
Yeah, I suppose what doesn't work in PUBG's favour is it's only available on PC and Xbox, and Xbox has Mixer streaming built in rather than Twitch.
Oh, that would affect it as well. Plus, a lot of people are bitching about the fact that the console version runs like garbage, which it does. And I think Fortnite recently got a 60 FPS patch as well for consoles.
So a couple of important things to note from that. That is just for the last 14 days. On basically every other metric, another game beats it. Particularly if you look at the last year, Fortnite comes fourth in most streamed, but it's quite a way down on most watched. So it's still got a long way to go, but it's currently very popular. Probably because
it's been out for... what, 6 months?
Fortnite came out like a year ago.
The original Fortnite, but Battle Royale's not been out too
long. It's counted as the same game.
Fair enough.
I think another thing that is really helping Royale, both in terms of its player count, its viewer count, and its, you know, growth, is that, and I just throw a dig here at Pug. Pug seem to take forever, even though they're a big company, as are Epic, like, to actually add anything to the game. Whereas I swear every other day there's something being added to Fortnite. And even when it first came out, the Battle Royale mode, they added something, you know, within a few days, a few weeks. Like, it's continuously getting a new stream of content. And even the map, they just, for the Lunar event, they've changed the map. Whereas Pug, like, how long did it take for them to bring in the second map? Ridiculously long.
Yeah, it seems as though, as soon as they went to full release, everything about their updates and their promises for all these new improvements is just slowed down. And we've not seen much of a massive increase in them. I mean, there's no new weapons either. The new map, which is a bit shit, is usually the map that you end up playing on. It takes ages, maybe 3-4 matches, you to go back on the first map, the original map. And then by then you're like, oh, can't be asked to play anymore. But yeah, Fortnite's had a massive changes, improvement.
And it's
very much... Go on, Nicky.
No, I was just going to quickly say as well that, like, it's very much shown by the fact that Epic made the decision to shut down, to shift all focus from every other title just on the Fortnite, because Paragons has gone now.
Yeah, they closed Paragon. They got rid of Paragon and just shifted the developer team over to the Fortnite.
Yeah, but no one was playing Paragon.
No.
I think it was like the day before they announced they were closing it. It took an hour for someone to get a game, and games last like 20 minutes. So they were wasting.
Yeah, jeez.
But it'll be interesting to see, especially with Fortnite, because they've taken very much the same approach as League of Legends. Everything changes every couple of weeks. It'll be interesting to see if it can maintain this. So, like League of Legends, to use as an example from a different genre, it's been up there on the most watched, most streamed consistently for years, like since before Twitch was Twitch. League of Legends has been there as a high streaming game, so it'll be interesting to see the longevity of if Fortnite can, or even PUBG, if it can survive the next couple years, or if it'll just be another longer term but another fad.
I feel like we are just hitting the peak of the Battle Royale craze. I know Battle Royale's been around for years, but obviously we've shifted from like survival horror and all these other genres to now being in Battlegrounds. And to be honest with you, I don't necessarily hate it. I do hate how much PUBG costs, though.
Well, from one Battle Royale to a Auto Royale. H1Z1 has finally left early access and to celebrate they added an Auto Royale mode, which has teams of 30 teams of 4 players, each in their own car, fighting against each other. Well, shooting each other, I should say, because you don't walk or run or get out. You just drive around and shoot.
So they make Carmageddon, but really shit.
Yes.
I was watching some streams of this the other day because curiosity got the better of me. And to be honest with you, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's actually kind of enjoyable to watch. I don't know how it's playing it, but I appreciate that they just went, screw it, let's just make something bonkers and hope it works. And it kind of does.
Who'd have thought? Do we think that Fortnite's going to add cars in about a month?
I was quite surprised that Fortnite didn't already have drivable cars in it. But I'd never really played it. H1Z1? Yeah. At least they're trying something different, I guess. To see, you know, it seems like they're just sort of throwing loads of things and see what sticks. You know, it could work. I mean, we haven't had a decent Carmageddon game.
To be fair, they've got the right idea. Original. They've got the right idea, because it's now way too late to come out with, oh, we're doing Battle Royale, and it's exactly the same, but it might be better. They really need to go back to MOBAs, they need to do something different, or they're going to just fail. Like, so they're doing the Smite approach, where it's, oh, it's the same game, but it's in a different perspective. Or rather, in this case, it's the same game, but everyone's in a car.
I can't let that go without a segue. Speaking of the same game, Rovio London are being shut down after about a year of being around, being founded, because people aren't spending big bucks on Angry Birds anymore. Basically.
Who would have thought?
Rovio reported that the fourth quarter losses were due to low interest in its newer mobile games. Personally, I think it's because they've moved away from flinging birds at pigs, which was their bread and butter, and they lost sight of that.
People kind of want they want popular PC and console titles now sort of in a mobile form these days, like MOBAs and Clash Royale, I don't know, something like that, the tactical ones.
This comes I would say in the wake, but apparently this news just dropped yesterday. A Deutsche Bank have valued Rovio as being basically worthless. It dropped 50% stock in a single day.
Jeez.
Late in February. It's looking bad for Rovio as a company in general, not just for their London studio.
It's always a shame to hear of any studio close its doors, because obviously, you know, it affects people's lives, and obviously all the best people that are affected trying to find new work. But with Rovio, it is very much a case of like, well, you did put all your eggs in one basket and then constantly keep cooking that omelette, so...
Ba-dum-bum.
So Yeah, and I don't know, like, because I played a lot of the Angry Birds games, and I liked them, but as soon as they dropped, what was it, the RPG one, I just immediately lost all interest in what that company was doing.
Yeah, they should have stayed with the Transformers. I'm not biased, you're biased.
There was a Transformers Angry Birds?
Yes, there was. It was an endless runner, basically.
Yeah,
your Transformer runs along the screen, and you have to tap on where you want it to shoot, and you can transform it. That's about it.
See, this is why the mobile market's saturated, and we keep having these sorts of things happen. Make new things, developers. Innovate, goddammit.
Well, that's not necessarily true, for they did make other things, but they dropped them because they just didn't. No one wanted them. People wanted more Angry Birds, so they stopped making things that weren't Angry Birds. Like, if you go on their Wikipedia page, before Angry Birds, they made 51 different games that are all just work for hire and stuff. Then they made Angry Birds and exploded. And then they kind of made some other things between like 2012 and 2014, 2015. They were kind of just doing their own thing alongside Angry Birds. And all of them failed.
I wonder if, like, in hindsight, and obviously it's a beautiful thing, hindsight, they should have... Because it's a very common thing you find with writers. I wonder if some companies in the games industry maybe need to do something similar in that, you know, they have what they're known for, but when they want to try and step off that line, so with, like, how they, Rovio here, tried that, maybe they should have used either like a sub company or like almost like a pseudonym in a way. So like they were still making the money from it, but at least people weren't comparing it to Angry Birds, if that makes sense.
That's a double-edged sword, to be honest, though, because on mobile, most of the time, the brand sells rather than actual gameplay. Because let's face it, the most popular games on mobile right now aren't exactly filled full of interesting, different gameplay.
It's kind of like when Mel Brooks wanted to do serious movies, he had to create a separate studio, Brooks Films, to put them out, because otherwise he'd present a serious project and studios would say, well, no, you're the funny guy. You can't make this.
Victims of your own success, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Speaking of success, the Switch. It's been a while since we've had some big news coming from them. And the news has been that game timers on launch titles have been resetting because it's recently celebrated its first birthday. Which means that if you if you bought a Switch on launch, the games will say that you have not played them.
Only Nintendo.
I know this isn't it, and it's just someone didn't think about this when they were programming all of the time in. But I really just like the idea that the coder behind this thought, well, the Wii U didn't sell, so no one's going to care if I go to lunch early today and don't code in the year.
Yeah, probably thought it won't last in a year.
You say that, but it was revealed the other day that the news feed on the Switch took, like, a year to make and was only four people. So I don't know how, like, if it was, like, 2 years to make this feature.
I hope that it wouldn't be a difficult thing to actually fix, but we'll see how long it takes, I guess.
Yeah, the last thing I read was that Nintendo have said that they're looking into it. We don't know how long it's going to take them to look into it, or what, or if there's going to be a fix, but
if any of you,
they're on the case, kind of.
This is really bad of me, but if any of you have seen, like, watch Game Grumps and have seen when they talk about Sad Hoshi, that's all I've got in my head right now. Is like, Nintendo have just turned to that one programmer and are just like, God damn it, this is all your fault! And he's just up there in the corner like, I'm sorry.
There is a couple of sort of outcomes of this. It's possible that the fix might completely reset the clocks. Just thinking in my programmer brain here, it could be that the year is there, it's just there's no way to display it, and so the system doesn't know what that like extra one is, so it's just presenting what it knows. So it could be that
I think that is
the actual
what's happened.
Dates are salvageable. It will depend, because if they're avoiding like a overflow, then they've probably knocked off that one, so that will be deleted. So it's possible that that's gone forever. It depends how tidy their coding is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that someone looked into it, and it is a case of, like, it's just not reading the year. So as far as the system's concerned, like, oh, it's... You haven't played since this day. This day's now a back, so therefore you've played for zero time since that day. But yeah, I suspect a lot of people will probably lose their times. This is why developers should just add the feature into the game instead. And as someone who usually cares about gameplay time, I'm not too concerned or fussed, but I know some people will be quite upset by this.
I really don't care about gameplay time, because it's not a statistic that affects anything, I don't think.
I want to know how much time I've wasted.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, actually, I suppose that's a good shout.
I want to know how much time I could have spent being a productive, useful member of society, but instead sat in Zelda riding my shield down mountains.
I spent how long getting that extra moon in Mario?
Plus there's the website howlongtobeat.com where you can input your own how long it took you to complete a game, whether you did the extra content or just the main missions.
I really hope someone's gone in with their completed Zelda save and just put 0 days.
That'd be the speedrunning community.
I mean, that would be a thing. This is only affect launch day games, which was what, Zelda and
1, 2, 3 Switch.
Did anyone put more than 20 minutes into that game?
People who only had that game.
I don't think that was. Is there many people who just bought the demo game?
Well, there's got to be someone.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, I think their big thing will be applying this fix before it starts affecting other games. And just sort of let Zelda be the one that dies on this sword.
Too true. Well, from one thing dying to one thing coming back to life, Prey, their Twitter, it was one of our games of the year, and featured quite prominently in several categories. The official Twitter account has posted a cryptic tweet. Do we really know what's out there? With a GIF of the camera panning from a Transtar sign to the moon. Transtar being the company that you works for, you being the character that you works for in the game. It would be cryptic enough on its own, but there's also a recently made Twitter account, ChasmaCorp, which in-game is one of Transtar's competitors. And they've posted up a picture of how to dissect a mimic. And within the last 24 hours as of recording, they've uploaded a second image having just gone to their Twitter account.
I'm more interested by their bio, because those are definitely map coordinates.
Yes, their Twitter bio is LLO 51.61 degrees, 24 kilometers, 165 kilometers, 113.65 minutes, which definitely sound like coordinates in the night sky, like where you'd aim a telescope.
I'm Googling this now.
I did try the other day, but I couldn't really work anything out. The LLO may stand for Low Lunar Orbit, it's theorized.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. I could delve a bit more into this.
Do you know what? Prey is still on my list of games I need to play.
I need to initiate.
I think it's on my list of games to buy.
It's a very good game.
Oh yeah, just the demo alone was fantastic, and also I hate to say it, but I kind of get the impression that Arkane kind of gave up towards the end of Dishonored 2 and then just put all their efforts into Prey. But I'd be interested to see more. Again, I don't know how the game ends or anything like that. I haven't played it, but it would be nice to see more Prey, because just the opening 10 minutes was fantastic enough. Also, I do love the little doodle of how to, you know, dissect the mimic.
Sorry, I've just done a quick look on the Prey subreddit. It seems to be a Typhon lure that wipes them out, maybe? Typhons being the aliens from Prey.
Wait, what?
In the game, you can get a Typhon lure. It's a grenade that flashes and is sparkly, and it lures the aliens towards it, so you can escape or take them out, or however you're playing the game.
But where does that tie into the ARG?
Well, the diagrams on the recent picture from yesterday shows something with three arms and with balls at the ends, which appear to, well, they've got wavy lines around them, kind of like a Typhon lure.
We need like the CSI style montage here of us trying to figure this out, with some aviators in there as well. But I mean, again, not knowing the ending, if this Twitter account is meant to represent a competitor in the game, is it potentially, you know, would it be fair to speculate that maybe this DLC, if it is one, we could be a rival trying to grab some secrets or something?
I don't think spoiling anything by saying that you can uncover logs that suggest someone has been slipping samples to a competitor. So if this is to do with a competitor, then perhaps you are an employee of Chasma Corp, and when everything when everything's going on at Transtar, this is going on concurrently, or this is happening before, or yeah. There are possibilities for it being a DLC about Chasma Corp. And the Chasma Corp Twitter account is being followed by several Arkane Studios staff members, so it's definitely a it's not a fan account, it's an official account. I can only assume everyone's looking at images now.
Sorry, yeah, we're still googling a little bit.
I am trying to find a map of the moon that would let me plug in coordinates, but no such thing exists apparently.
Maybe we're going to the dark side of the moon.
I think people did, from the Reddit threads that I saw the other day, people did suggest looking on Google Moon, but I don't think anyone actually did.
Google Moon is a bit shit, though. It doesn't really give you anything. I just tried that.
Like, oh my god, this is a thing. I didn't know Google Moon was a thing. This is amazing.
Oh yeah, it's amazing, but also not useful in any way in this circumstance.
I found what looks like a face. Aliens confirmed.
We found the man in the moon.
Oh look, it's David Bowie. I still to this day don't understand why. Like, I know there's nothing on the moon. Like, there's no need for us to be there, but why are we not just building a base on the moon? It'd be so cool.
The Nazis already tried it.
Yeah, they failed. But they fail at everything.
That's a fair point.
That's the wrong Bethesda property now.
That would be a crossover and a half.
That would be, actually.
Just imagine, I don't know, what was the name of the protagonist from Prey?
You.
Morgan You, or there's a female variant as well.
Pretty sure they're both Morgan You.
Are they both called Morgan? Yeah. No, it's just, yeah, I suppose it, yeah. It's just, yeah.
Three-way crossover between Morgan You, BJ Blazkowicz, and the Doom Marine.
Yeah.
But then you wouldn't be going to the moon, you'd be going to one of Mars's moons.
I mean, the situation on the space station may have been handled a bit more quickly had the Doom guy been there. I'm not saying it'd still be there, but...
We'd also probably know a lot less about the story of everything if the Doom guy was there.
And a lot more about pyrotechnics.
We'd find out what would happen if that panel got punched, though.
I love the Doom guy. I would love for them as well.
I have a pop of the Doom guy.
Nice. I know it's not going to happen, because obviously we know it's Doom guy, but I would love if they had pulled a Samus, where, like, even now, it was still just, no one knew if it was a guy or not, and then all of a sudden, there's like, boom, it's just a really angry, like, Viking woman. Basically, take Marcus from StarCraft 2, but just female. Done. Doom woman.
That's not something I needed to think about today.
The final thing I wanted to bring up is the Far Cry 5 arcade that's been revealed today in a trailer. Basically, it's a very fancy map editor for Far Cry 5, which will bring with its items from Far Cry, obviously Far Cry 5, Far Cry 4, Far Cry Primal, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, Assassin's Creed Unity, and Watch Dogs. So you can make your own maps. For instance, a post-apocalyptic city, or an underwater city, or a mountain range.
That's quite funky.
That sounds like a game designer's dream.
I'm just looking at the trailer, and I really didn't think that mixing all those assets together would work, but this is so Far Cry, because it's just a fever dream, and I love yes. it, and I need it right now.
Yeah, but this... the plan is...
Go on,
The plan is that you can enter the arcade at any point, well, practically any point during Far Cry 5's campaign. There'll be posters or that you can interact with, or arcade machine cabinets. If you enter into one, all your XP and cash that you earn through there's co-op challenge and is it 6v6 or 12v12? But 12 player team death matches. Yeah, or everything you earn there you can carry into the main game, so you can buy new outfits, for instance.
This Far Cry 5 looks like a massive improvement over the 4th.
It looks really fun.
It does.
I think I might be in love with this game already. Also, in case anyone missed it, you know, Far Cry 5 revealed the other day that you can have a companion that is a grizzly bear called Cheeseburger who has diabetes. Game of the year confirmed.
I missed that.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
Game of the fucking year.
So long as it's not full of de novo and bugs.
Yeah, the only concern is probably the PC port. But then again, like I was saying with Assassin's Creed Origins, that was really good. Port on that is fine. So they've definitely made some improvements over the years compared to how they used to be. You play still a load of shit.
I honestly think this, like, I've been relatively on the fence with Far Cry because I don't really like Far Cry games that much. But this might be the thing I buy the game for. Never play the actual game and just play this. This is right up my street. I have nearly 90 hours in Portal 2, and most of that is in the creator.
Well, there's also going to be... they're going to release official maps, and they're going to curate maps that other people make. And there'll be challenges every week. I think it was every Friday, probably going for Far Cry Friday or something. Hashtag Far Cry Friday. Yeah, so it's... But,
I mean, there's a screenshot where the guy's got a bow and arrow. There's the Golden Gate Bridge there for some reason. Or I think there's a bridge there. There's a Yeti flinging pigs wearing party hats all over the place. This just looks so cool.
But that is Far Cry.
I can't help but be worried about the microtransactions. Because they've revealed what the season pass is going to be. It's going to be Vietnam, aliens, and zombie mode. They've revealed this Far Cry Arcade, which is going to be free in the main campaign. So, what's the deals? What's the microtransactions going to be?
They did actually reveal this the other day that the game is going to have microtransactions. It's not going to have loot boxes, and I think it's cosmetics plus the occasional like premium weapon. I haven't fully looked into it, but the way it was just sort of described to me is that it'll be like you can get this gun in the game, but if you pay a little bit of money, you can have the same gun, but a wacky pattern, and I don't know, maybe it has an extra attachment or two. But they have confirmed no loot boxes, and there won't be anything sort of too ridiculously different or something.
The game was delayed by a month. And I guarantee, and it was delayed very shortly after all that kickoff about Battlefront 2 and their loot boxes. I guarantee they were busy removing loot boxes.
Oh, totally. When you look at the thing that they revealed, silver bars are hidden at every outpost and some other locations in Hope County. Use silver bars to buy prestige weapons, vehicles, clothes, and skins from any shop in the world. That's loot box items. That's items you stick in a box and randomize. So they've just stripped that out, which is good. Still not good that there's a microtransaction economy in this game.
It's looked like they're probably going to go with what they've done with Origins. Origins has sort of got the loot box system in it, but there's uses that helix point things, but you don't buy boxes, you just literally buy ammo, you know, you could buy special types of weapons and mounts and costumes and all that bollocks.
Yeah, it's looking like the Far Cry 5 instance is purely going to be cosmetics, but you will be able to earn potentially enough currency from just playing the game to buy it. But I imagine that arcade mode, they'll give it a couple of months and then they'll probably start packing that full of optional prop packs.
Yeah. It's what you play, Ubisoft usually end up doing. They start off quite nice and loving to the community, and then a year later, or maybe 6 months down the line, then they stick in the loot boxes, because they've done it with Siege. They did it with... what else did they do? They did it with Siege as well, which got a bit of backlash with the cosmetics. They did it with Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon, and they did it with Division. So... It will happen. It's just it won't be straight away.
And they always lock content behind the Uplay bullshit anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but they're quite easy to earn. They're just like the little Uplay achievements. You know, you just play for the story or you do certain actions and then you can get some additional stuff. But I don't like the fact that there's like quests or like additional missions locked behind that. That's a bit annoying. I don't mind like an extra costume or a weapon or some bollocks, but yeah.
I just hope they don't come out with their own type of creation club like Bethesda's with quote-unquote not paid DLC.
I kind of hope they do, but they do it actually properly and not launch it with just nothing in it. Because I still think that's an idea that could work if someone actually was to just do it right. But Bethesda did it so half-heartedly and so poorly that it failed before it even got to find its feet for the second time round.
It's still available.
Yeah, but I don't think any content's been added to it in about 6 months.
Sorry, what was that? I zoned out.
Creation Club, Bethesda's.
Oh, that thing could just die in a hole. Mods. But that thing can literally just die in a hole. Like, that's probably the worst, second, third worst thing Bethesda have ever done, really. It's like, and I hate that they keep trying to do that.
Yeah, but Bethesda, though, they're really just capitalizing on, like, mods that already pre existed for Bethesda games. Ubisoft has never really been one to offer modding tools. Besides, you know, in-game editors, like for Far Cry. But there's no actual people out there creating third-party mods or changes. Unless they're... I mean, there's a few for, like, maybe Far Cry 3 and maybe 2, but make game changes to make, like things like Sweet FX and stuff like that. But there's no actual, like, oh, this modded gun or this modded weapon or, you know, this complete mod overhaul. Ubisoft have never really allowed that for their titles. But this Far Cry 5 editor could be the start of something if they do expand it.
I wonder how much of that is just the engine. Because the reason Bethesda games are always so moddable is because they've used the same... They've built on the same engine framework for, like, well, I was going to say a decade, but it probably is longer. Whereas Ubisoft, they've got their own engine, but I think they've used quite a few over the years, so no one's ever really been able to get in there and work out how to get the script hooks and things in to make those sort of mods work.
The Ubisoft engines are all based on the CryEngine.
Yeah, they did start off as based off the CryEngine.
Yeah,
except for the Assassin's Creed engine, that was built from scratch.
No, I thought that was the one.
Was it? No, I know Far Cry 2 was built off the CryEngine, and it was called the Dubai or Doomba engine or something like that, and then it expanded across from there. And Assassin's Creed has always been built off Scimitar engine.
You are correct. Yeah, I've just double checked. Yeah.
So they use Anvil, and I think they use Snowdrop.
Assassin's Creed and recent ones.
So basically all the Assassin's Creed are Anvil. You've got Ghost Recon Wildlands, For Honor and Steep are in there as well. Snowdrop is The Division. That's an interesting five projects. The Division, Mario and Rabbids, South Park The Fractured Butthole, Avatar Project, which doesn't have a Wikipedia link, and Starlink Battle for Atlas.
Yes, no, Division was the first to use the Snowdrop, and that was supposed to be their answer to the Frostbite engine. It was built and designed to specifically be multi-purpose, like it could be used to make any game, which is why South Park and that Rayman Mario game uses it, because it's surprisingly well optimized for it. But Ubisoft still use, I think Rainbow Six Siege uses the Anvil engine for its destructibility. And yeah, this sort of just gone from there, really. I don't know why. With Bethesda, yeah, Bethesda have always sort of been really open with their engine because they sort of give away. I remember the days when Morrowind, when I was playing Morrowind and sort of when Oblivion sort of came out, they released the creation kit. And the creation kit was just literally the entire editor and modding tools. And it was quite well... it's quite easy to work with when it came to like putting your own custom textures into the game. It had lots of support for different 3D programs. So you could go to some guy's website who's made a 3D model, download the meshes and whatever else for it, and actually play around with it within the creator of from Oblivion and fuck around with the textures if you wanted to. It was rather open.
Yeah, so it was kind of right when I said Bethesda have been using the same engine for 10 years. They started off with Gamebryo and then made their own, the creation engine for Skyrim, and they've been using that since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still buggy as hell. Jeez.
By which I mean they made two games, Skyrim and Fallout 4, both. They're the only two games that have been made with creation.
They also made Skyrim Special Edition. And Skyrim on Switch.
I think the two best engines to work with is probably the Unreal Engine, and I don't know, maybe I don't want to say the Gamebryo or whatever it's creation engine. It's easy to mess around with, but it's just buggy. It's good for mods. Unreal Engine, that's great for games.
I mean, speaking out to anyone really, if you don't have the funds to make your own engine, then go Unity or Unreal, because you'll get the reason games companies make their own engine is because they want to do random things with it. But Unreal and Unity have spent the last like 5 years making their engine, so you can just do whatever the fuck you want with them.
The best piece of advice I was ever given years and years ago when I was, you know, started off in the games industry, because I do development and stuff as well, is if you want to make...
Don't have children.
There's that. That's the second most. The first most important is if you want to make a game, make a game. If you want to make an engine, make an engine. If you decide you want to make a game and then spend 5 years making an engine, you're an idiot.
Yeah. It's the same with... Like when I delved into the video game side of things and doing some development, you have to sort of set your decision on what you're going to do first. Are you gonna design, or are you gonna build it, or are you gonna create the character models? Because there's all those aspects. You look at, you know, you need to, are you gonna focus on making textures? Are you gonna focus on doing the level design? Are you gonna focus on doing this, that, and this? It does involve a lot of work.
It's really interesting hearing you say that, Nicky, because I got some sort of similar but actually quite different advice. I got, if you want to make a game, make a game. If you want to make an engine, you better have 30 million in your pocket.
And the best engine... Good.
I was just going to say, at the end of the day, if you want to be making engines and, you know, software, then you go into that. You know, if you want to make games, you go into games design roles and things. And...
Yeah. Exactly. The best engine that's never going to be properly used to its fullest potential is the Fox engine.
Why do you have to hurt me?
Fuck you, Konami.
And on that, we've reached the end of our time.
Oh, we're just going to end on me being sad.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining Cal, Nikki, and Catty. You can find us and tweet to us on Twitter at Grimcast. You can find Game Grin on Facebook, Twitter, and our Instagram at Game Grin site. Remember to check out our Twitch stream from 8 p.m. GMT every single day. And you can find this very podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or GameGrin.com. And while you're at it, game on.